At California Psychics, we know some people can't read the career warning signs, like your boss still not knowing your name.
You, Tina, Lisa, Sheila, whatever. Get that report to me by lunch, okay?
It's Carrie, ma'am?
Just get it done, Terry.
So talk to California Psychics and receive the career guidance you need. We only connect you with the very best, so guarantee if your reading isn't life-changing, it's free. California Psychics. Call 1-800-PREDICT today and get 20 minutes for just $20.
Good evening, everybody. How y'all doing? Hope you got through the weekend. The weather. It's been so nice. Now, I'm out here in California. People roll their eyes and they laugh whenever I say to them, I hate the heat. I hate the sun. I've talked about it on the show before. I definitely am negatively impacted by that. My seasonal affective is kind of in reverse. Most people, it's the cold, the rain, the darker, colder weather that starts to bring in depression and anxiety. For me, it's quite the opposite. Like a lot of people that have reached out and I've talked about this, for some, the summer heat does that. And like myself, when it gets colder, darker and cooler, I settle down. It kind of soothes my psyche and my nervous system. You know, it's both biological and psychological. So it's a psychobiosomatic. But more importantly, this cool weather. I thought it was coming and it was getting hot. So I know everyone's like, why are you in California if you hate the heat? And I'm like, because I love it here. But cooler weather. Halloween is coming. I don't know if y'all have been keeping up with the news. I've been better about it these days. I'm taking breaks from a lot of things. That's one of them. Although, you know, paying attention to what's going on in the world around us as much as I can. Halloween, so far from what I heard, and this, of course, this can change, and this isn't because people are giving us misinformation or lying to us. It's because with science and what's going on with COVID, we're constantly updating based on updates. It's an ever-changing, shifting thing, and will continue to. So I heard Fauci saying, we think, might change, that we're going to be able to do our Halloween a little more like we're used to, maybe not 100% in the same way. So that's pretty cool. I'm still going to be very cautious. You're not going to see me at parties, but I might walk the streets a little bit distant from everyone. I'm still not feeling comfortable around others or in closed spaces. But again, it's because I have a wonky immune system, and also I don't want to get sick or pass it on to anyone. But all that to say, I hope you are enjoying the changing of the seasons. This is when I deeply miss the East Coast. Sorry, I'm a Philly boy, Philly, New York. It's where I lived all my life. And I love the changing of the weather because there's an actual fall, an actual autumn. We don't have that in California. It's blistering hot, and then it's cool for a while, and then hot again. There's really no shift or change. And for those that live on the East Coast and know this, the beautiful, cool weather, snow at some point, I know y'all hate that, but from afar, it's nice. But the changing of the leaves and the leaves falling, it's like the colors. I think it's the colors I miss. On the East Coast, I'm sorry, I keep saying that. On the West Coast, the colors never change. On the East Coast, we go through changes of season, and you can tell looking out the window based on the colors of the leaves, the fullness of the trees, the plants. Here in California, the plants are kicking it year round. Like the foliage is hardy, it holds up. So I miss those beautiful recognitions of the changing of the seasons, but also just the color stories that it provides. I miss it, the hot chocolate or the hot apple cider, going pumpkin picking. Although that is something I suppose that can be done out here. It tends to be very different on the West Coast. We just go to places that already have them picked and you buy one. But East Coast, we used to go to pumpkin patches. It was really beautiful, very sustainably done. And purchase these pumpkins and carve them. So we'll see which ways we can still do that. But know that, you know, we might be able to have Halloween a little more normal as we're used to. But even if not, we still want to do something, right? There's so many different ways to participate in holidays. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about it, knowing that there's a lot more holidays coming. And not every country is necessarily wide open with the borders. Not every city has low enough infection rates to maybe travel there, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there are going to be people that aren't necessarily participating in, you know, in the holidays, in the traditional ways. But as I say every year, still do something. It's okay to do things differently. Different doesn't mean canceled or bad or wrong or broken, right? We want to have that flexibility and that creativity. Even if we're not going home or getting together with people for all the holidays that are coming, because it's almost like they're like bam, 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 bam in a row from, what is it? essentially Halloween. Well, Canada already had their Thanksgiving. So from Canadian Thanksgiving, I don't know where to start, all the way to like New Year's, bam, bam, bam. So we're not going to be able to necessarily do it all the ways we wanted before, but you can still dress up. You can still maybe with other vaccinated friends, see them. You can still prepare the meals. Even if you're spending it alone, you can still dress up. You can still prepare the normal meals. You can still play the music, watch the shows. Please don't, as they say, throw the baby out with the bathwater because you can't do it in style or the way you did before. It just doesn't matter anymore. Maybe it does, or it doesn't. It's okay to pass on it as well. I've been here, there, and all around. So I've had all different kinds of holidays. Holidays the way I wanted, holidays on my own, holidays just with friends. And each one had its strengths, each one had its weaknesses. But I tried to always participate because I knew it was going to feel better to do something than to pretend as though it's not happening or existing. Although for those that choose that route, you got my support. They're just holidays. They are socially created moments to honor and celebrate events and share space with others and culture and food and family. But that's not the case for everyone, and that's okay as well. So I ramble. Nonetheless, when we come back, we're going to talk about how to deal with difficult emotions. But the DMs, you know how that works. DMs are always open. So if you've got a question for us or a topic you want us to cover, drop it in the DMs on our Loveline IG page. And we are channelq.com. That's where you want to go to check out past episodes. So stick around. We're going to talk about difficult emotions, something we all got to work on. You are listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on Channel Q and Odyssey. We'll be back, y'all. Stick around. All right, y'all, we are back talking about difficult emotions. So broad, then we'll cut it down, narrow it down, zero on in, talk about solutions, tools, and tips and tricks. But emotions, they're how we communicate. I think culturally and in a lot of our families, we all want to be rational, logical. There's a place for that. We don't ever want to be just one without the other. Emotions require some logic, and logic requires emotionality. We love all logic and rationality. I'm trying to make up words there. But emotions are the most honest part of us. Emotions are psycho-bio. Emotions are both our psychology and our biology in action. There's no emotion that doesn't also have a physical representation. All emotions are felt in our bodies. Think about it. Think about anger. For a second, your body shifts and changes. Your face tightens, it crunches, your eyes widen, your fists clench. That's blood rushing to those protective muscles. We're getting ready. When we get into a strong emotion, though, without logic, what happens? Well, we harm self and others because we haven't thought through consequences. We haven't really recognized or registered that we have options. So that's why we do need the rational there. But most of us are very disconnected from our emotional functioning, our emotional center, letting our emotions communicate a need. Our emotions are what tell us, are where we're told what we need. And so we don't want to be afraid of them because mental health is the ability to feel a full range of emotions, all of them, and to feel them deeply. We talk about that often, how there are no negative emotions, although we've decided a group of them are negative or bad. And some people do believe that mental health or even spirituality is about never feeling those. You know, being spiritual or mentally healthy is you're always happy. You're always doing well. That's not real or honest. And I don't believe that. And that isn't mental health. Mental health is I can feel all my feelings. I can feel them deeply. I'm not ruled by them. I'm not overwhelmed by them. I'm generally not afraid of them. I can fluidly and flexibly move in and out. I bring rationality to them and I say, how rational is this feeling or emotion? Is it a 3 or a 4 or is it a 9 or a 10? And we keep ourselves in check a little bit. Emotions are how we connect to others. So we don't want to suppress them. We don't want to ignore them and we don't want to avoid them. That is not good for both our long-term health. It's also not good for our relationships because healthy relationships are very emotionally connected and operate on the emotional level. And we are aware of those emotional expressions. Healthy partnership, let's talk romantically for those that are in any kind of romantic dynamic. But again, this applies to parent and child, friend and friend. What makes us feel safe and connected to that person when we first start to develop that, what really builds trust is when we share emotion. If we compared relationships where we could be very emotionally vulnerable and honest versus relationships where maybe it's a little logical, we stay in our heads, we keep it a little news, weather, and business. Which ones do you feel safest in? Which ones do you trust more? Which person do you feel closer to? Sure, the person who sits in, I don't know, the seat on the bus next to you on the way to work or at the cubicle next to yours, you talk about your weekends casually, you talk about what TV shows you're watching, you enjoy them. But I don't believe you really feel like you know them. I don't know that you feel quote unquote safe with them. And that's because of the lack of a lot of deep, vulnerable, emotional sharing. For most individuals, that relationship that we're referencing or thinking about, it really takes off. It really feels real. We really count them as close the first time we start sharing emotionality. And when we start to share, they know that they can share. Or when they take that risk and share, we know that we can share. That's what it's built on, those deep, intimate moments. Because remember, intimacy is when we share things that make us a little anxious because it's vulnerable. It's okay to have relationships where everything's very safe. Oh, I watched the new horror movie, blah, blah, blah. How was it? It's very safe. But when we're a little anxious and we say, oh, you know, I didn't really have a great weekend. My relationship's in a little bit of trouble. That little bit of anxiety, that vulnerability, that's how we know we're really building intimacy. And if you're never feeling that or living from that or expressing from that, you're probably living in a lot of very topical, superficial relationships. Not to keep using this example, because I think there's a beautiful version of it, but we've been out to eat, and I see this all the time, and I love this example. And you see the couple that's sitting quietly. I bring this up probably once a week on the show, probably all the time in clinical practice as well. Now, there's the version of it that feels good and secure, and we can look over and be like, oh, I feel okay with what I'm seeing. They look just confident and comfortable. There just isn't anything needing to maybe be said in the moment. But we've also seen the couples where we feel very anxious because they're not looking at each other. They're just eating their food with their head down. When they're done eating, they're kind of looking around. And it feels very scary. It feels very anxiety inducing. It feels like something's wrong. And that's because no one's really building intimacy anymore. They've said what they've needed to say. They've shared all the topical things. And now their relationship's requiring someone to go deeper and to share dreams, hopes, fears, feelings. And they don't, and they can't, or they won't. And that stalls out. So really assess that. You know, are you sharing those more vulnerable, deeper emotional parts of yourself with the people that have earned that right or that trust and that you want to be deeper with? Because that's how we do that. That's when that begins. I also work with a lot of clients that share with me in a very beautiful way, the tears coming down their eyes or their voices shaking a little bit. The story of the first time that maybe a parent who traditionally, usually it's the father, who's been raised to believe his only job is to, you know, raise money for the family and is never given the chance to be a caretaker or to participate. And that's both the capitalistic corporate system that does that, but also gender roles. And that father, for this example, finally tells the child they love them or hugs them or starts to express fear or work stress or financial stress. And it's like, oh my God, I finally got to know my dad, or he finally built a relationship with me. And it's always that those statements and that feeling is born out of the experience of sharing something very vulnerably. It's so beautiful. We want to make sure we're doing that, especially with people that are important to us. We'll take a little break. We'll come back and keep talking about difficult emotions. They are the spice of life. They are the root of relationality. You're listening to Love Line with Dr. Chris on Channel Q and Odyssey. We'll be back, y'all, so stick around. All right, we're back and we're talking about difficult emotions and using essentially mindfulness, which is another way of just saying awareness, to handle unpleasant feelings, because we live in a culture where we're afraid of them. Look, I'm not saying things like etiquette and politeness aren't important or good. They are when they're rooted in kindness and compassion. They aren't when they're part of us feeling as though we're not allowed to ever frustrate or disappoint or say no or be honest in very compassionate, relational, reasonable moments. And sometimes etiquette and politeness is like, well, just keep a smile on your face. It's toxic positivity. Just perform happiness, pretend you're happy. Don't share with yourself or others what's really going on. Let's just operate on the superficial level. No one's vulnerable. No one's real. And it's just glitter and sunshine. It's like, what are we doing at that point then? Why? We have to shift that idea that some emotions are bad or wrong. We're all going to feel depressed. We're all going to feel anxious. We're all going to feel angry. We're all going to feel scared. We're all going to feel lonely. And it's very hard for us to vocalize those things, which then help us get our needs met and help others help us if we don't make those things familiar and normal to express or to hear. That's why back in early COVID, I was saying a lot on the show, don't just say to people, how are you? Say to people, how's your mental health? Because those are two very different questions. Now, they sound the same in theory, but the difference is that how you doing has become very common. It's polite. It's not honest. People say that because they need to say a greeting. They don't actually mean, I care about you. I want to hold space right now to really go deep with you and to understand who you are and to connect. And so when you say to someone, how's your mental health? That shakes them because it's a different question and it's very targeted. And when you say to someone, how you doing? They can say something very cute or closed-ended or short, like, great, loving this weather. But if you say to someone, how's your mental health? They're not going to say, great, loving the cold, because that's a very odd answer and it doesn't speak to the question. So the question is very specific, it's very targeted, and it really directs them to something soft and vulnerable, like, how's your mental health? And people stop for a second. They'll usually go, oh, I've been a little depressed or I'm very stressed. And then all of a sudden, bam, we're off and running. We're connecting. I feel like they're revealing themselves. Tells me it's safe for me to reveal myself. It makes me soften. And I know we're having a real relationship. This is like a real person versus the people like, everything's cool, doing good, eager for the winter. And then you're like, okay, so we're going to just keep it cute, keep it topical, keep it superficial. This isn't real. Got it. We don't want to have a lot of that or a lot of those people in our lives because it'll feel very depressive. It'll feel very, that's where anxiety comes in. Because remember, we're relational beings and we are co-regulated by those around us. That's an important asset. We want to have what we call barred functioning. I was raised clinically to think that that was a bad thing. I now know better through better research that we do use each other as regulators. And the most powerful way to regulate ourselves is to turn to another, someone we trust, to share with them, to sit with them, and depending on our relationship, them to maybe hold them, have them hold us. We do that as children. We need that as adults. But we shut all that down when we shame the expression of emotion. We're not known and we can't get our needs met. So we want to get familiar expressing these things like, hey, I'm feeling really lonely. I had a really beautiful thing happen over the weekend, actually, where a friend of mine, who's a very good friend of mine, and doesn't generally have a lot of anxiety around really expressing what they need, but just very beautifully said to me, essentially, come over, I'm lonely. And my answer was immediately, yes. Had they said something like, what are you doing? I was in the middle of doing something. And had they not actually expressed emotion, like, I'm lonely, come over, I might have thought that they just wanted to kill some time. And I probably would have said, I'm very busy because I was in the middle of doing something. I was cleaning. But in them actually being vulnerable and saying, I'm lonely, and that again, emotion expressing a need, I'm lonely, I need to be around others, in them telling me that, I was able to understand them, empathize with them, and go provide that by saying, I will come spend time with you. And that's what one should do. Not reach for the video games, not reach for drugs or alcohol, reach for people. And that's why, again, we talk about sobriety not being abstinence. Sobriety is connection, because addiction isn't a disease. Addiction is an attachment issue. Addiction is these individuals being trained from early life and throughout adulthood that they can't turn to others. Others aren't available because of trauma, because they're not safe, because of the world that they built or the world they're a part of. And so they turn to autoregulation, which is drugs, alcohol, food, games, whatever it is. No one lost in addiction has healthy, functional, vulnerable relationships, but that's part of sobriety. And that is the goal of sobriety. And that's what speaks to someone having long-term sobriety. But going back to just common use, if we aren't in touch with our emotions, if we don't feel safe expressing our emotions, then we don't actually get them resolved. My friend, maybe if he didn't feel safe saying to me, I'm lonely, come over, which is very vulnerable, especially for a man in our sex, you know, in our, you know, toxically masculine world to be that vulnerable and to make those requests. But had he not said that, instead, had he just, I don't know, played video games, gone and eaten something or whatever else, that need would have remained. And so not only would that need not have gotten met, that person would have missed out on healing and connection and relationship and left feeling better after we spent time together, and then was able to go back and do what they need to do, which is what we talk about with healthy relationships with child and parent, and also to adults romantically, which is we need our partner or our parent to be a secure base for us to go off into the world. We're going to take a little break, slide into those DMs, and then we'll come back and finish this. So stick around. Listen to Loveline with Dr. Chris on Channel Q and Odyssey. We'll be back. All right, y'all, we are back, and now it's time to slide into those DMs.
Sliding into the DMs.
This one says, hey, Dr. Chris, my friend has been in a relationship with this girl for over a year. They live together. Pretty serious. Him and I went out the other day, and although I didn't see it, I'm pretty sure he cheated on the girl. Oh, no, here we go. This isn't the first time he's done this. In his last four relationships, he cheated on all of them. See, this is someone who isn't mature enough to be in a relationship because either they're not ready for monogamy, they can't manage it well, maybe they're not built for monogamy, but they keep entering in relationships, obviously making a commitment for monogamy, which they know better, and harming people. Know what's possible for you, and either work on being better and doing better or stop asking for monogamy. It's a bummer. You said, I know it's none of my business. Oh my God, I hate these questions because it gets real clunky and funky. I know it's none of my business, but I feel like he needs to know that he's a serial cheater. Maybe he should address that. I haven't said anything to him yet, but I wanted to know if you think it's worth addressing. Yes, yes. It's called being a good friend. A good friend lets someone know when they're harming other people, themselves or others. Please have a talk with him. Don't judge him. Point it out. Hey, bro, I noticed you cheated on your girl. I was there. I noticed that you've done it in the past. Can we talk about why that is? You're harming people. That's not okay. That's not kind. That is what a good friend does. They help us learn about ourselves. They help us be better. They lovingly call us in, which means they don't put us on blast, but they sit down and they talk to us about whatever we might be doing that's harming people. So yes, please, you are responsible. Talk to this person. You saw it. You could also say, I don't want to be a part of that. I don't want to be around it. You could even go as far as to say you're harming people and I don't want to be put in a position where maybe I form a relationship with a girl you're dating and I feel the need to share with her what's happening to her. Help this person understand that they have work to do. I want us to all be in friendships and relationships of all kinds where people can have these kind of conversations with us. So yes, please. It is part of a friendship. It's part of the contract we make is that we will talk to people about things that are important. Because otherwise, what do you and your friends talk about? Like, do you just sit around laughing and high-fiving? You never have deep conversations about who you are and what it's like to be in your friendships and how you see each other moving through the world and how you want to work on stuff. And you never say things like, hey, I think you're maybe drinking too much. Or I'm worried about the fact that, you know, you never see us because you're working out. You have an unhealthy relationship with exercise. Like, y'all never talk about vulnerable, serious things. And if not, use this as a moment to realize I want deeper friendships. Because if I can't lovingly and calmly approach my friend about the fact that he's harming people by cheating, I probably can't talk about other important things. But I want you to be in friendships where you can say that. Don't judge. Just say, hey, I know I wouldn't want to be on the receiving end of that. And I don't think you would either. Let's be better. How can we fix this? How can we work on this? So yes, please. I'm telling you, you have to. Because I'm sure that your friend wouldn't want to be on the receiving end of it, because even though he's cheating on everyone, I bet you he would be upset and feel wounded and victimized if he found out his girl was doing that to him. You know, but it shouldn't even matter. Even if they're not and they won't and they don't, we still want to be aware of how we're impacting others, because this is someone who doesn't care about harming people, which means I have to believe he'll be okay harming you, even if it's on a smaller level, because his ethics are off. When we get into a relationship with someone, if we make a commitment, that's there. And if we promise monogamy, we do that. And if we can't, we let someone know, listen, that's not something I can upkeep, or I struggle with that. So yes, have that conversation. And to my listeners, be open to that conversation being had with you. If a friend sits you down, that's a sign of a good friend. Bad friends are the kind that just co-sign on our crap. Good friends sit down and say, let's be better. So be that kind of friends, be that kind of social system where we don't harm people and we expect the best. I love that. That's how I know my friends are good friends, when they call me out and they're really there for me, honestly. So please do that. DMs. Got a DM for us? Drop in the DMs on our Loveline IG page. Questions, topics, things you want us to circle back to. Let us know. We're happy to hear from you in any way. And past episodes of Loveline over at wearechannelq.com. I'm telling y'all, we need repetition. We don't always have the best social group. That's not telling us the things we need to hear. So sometimes you got to listen to a show like Loveline to really call yourself out and to learn about yourself. It's a good thing. Hard conversations are how we learn and grow. So go to wearechannelq.com. are, channelq.com. Scroll down, look for Loveline, click on it. You can binge, post, share, re-listen over and over and over again. Check out my books, Rebel Love and Sex Outside the Lines, because it's the new year, y'all, and we're working on being our better selves. But stick around. We'll be back talking about difficult emotions. I'm going to be talking about a lot of that over and over, how to work with emotions, how to work with disappointment and frustration. So it's a little repetitive. We've talked about it before, but these are the kinds of things we need to keep top of mind. So stick around. We'll be talking about that. Listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on Channel Q and Odyssey. We'll be right back. All right, y'all, we are back and we're talking about difficult emotions. And before the break, where we did some DMs, I was just telling you a story about how it's very hard in our culture. We haven't really normalized the softness or the sharing of what we deem to be negative emotions. No such thing. There are no bad or negative emotions. All emotions are communications and energies in our body and our psyche, and they all need expression. And we've just decided some are good or some are bad. And they're all just emotions. And we need to feel all of them. And I was sharing a story about a friend vulnerably saying, "I'm lonely. Can I see you? I'm lonely. Come over. I'm lonely. I need to spend time with someone." And how their willingness to be vulnerable and express that emotion, a communication, helped them understand what the solution was. If I'm lonely, it means I want to try to be around others. They were then able to reach out and get that need met. I, hearing a direct, clear request, "I'm lonely, come over," was able to provide that. But often we have shame around asking. And so we do it in indirect ways, passive ways, and then we feel let down, or it reinforces the idea that there isn't anyone there for me and I am in it on my own. Because sometimes people don't ask directly and clearly. "I'm feeling scared. I need to talk something out with you. I'm feeling lonely. Can we spend time together?" But if we're passive and just say, "What are you doing? Come over," and the person doesn't hear any actual emotional communication, they might say, "Like, I almost did. I'm really busy. I can't today." And then they're like, "Fine." So then their feelings are hurt and they're realizing they're alone more than they thought. And they turn to these like auto-regulatory things versus reaching out. And all the wheels fall off because that person just really struggled to honestly say, "This is what I need. Can you provide this?" And that's what we need to be doing. But we can only do that if we practice. So we want to practice honoring our emotions, feeling what we feel and expressing it. "Hey, I'm feeling really scared right now." Or that, "Wow, what you just said made me anxious." And that's the basis of most adult issues is with couples. All couples I work with, a lot of their issues are that people aren't living from, speaking from, feeling from what we call primary emotions. And those primary emotions are generally very soft. Fear, loneliness, anxiety, sadness. And those are what we need to be able to bring up to our partner. But instead, we feel shame around those and we go to what we call secondary emotions, where we just get mad. Usually that's the anger we go to. Just anger and frustration. We don't honestly ask for what we need vulnerably. We don't honestly speak from what we're feeling vulnerably. And instead we go to that anger piece and then we can't even get our needs met. So for instance, if I'm with my best friend and he says something that hurts my feelings, and instead of going, "Ouch, oh man, that was really hard to hear. I can't believe you said that. Like, I'm really sad." If I say that, what do you think his response is going to be? His response would be like, "Oh my God, I'm really sorry." Because again, this isn't a healthy relationship. Unhealthy relationships, they happen differently. We shouldn't be in them. Please get out. But in a healthy relationship, a healthy person would go, "Oh my God, thank you for telling me I hurt your feelings. I'm really sorry. I didn't mean it like that." Or they might say something like, "This is what I actually meant to say." And yes, people do that. Everyone in my life does that. I only have healthy friends. Believe it or not, I've done that work. You can too. Finding higher functioning people. I'm in a relationship with a higher functioning person. I have a very beautifully secure, loving relationship. We don't name call. We don't bully. We don't attack. We express ourselves. It's possible. Find it. Point being, in that example, had I not said, "Ow, wow, that really hurt me. That made me sad. I can't believe you just said that to me." Had I just gone to anger, which is where most people go, and they're like, "Excuse me, what did you just say?" I jumped over the initial emotion, which was there, which was like, "Ooh, that stunk. That hurt. That stung." I go to anger. What do you think they do? They meet me in the anger and they're like, "I'm sorry, what?" And then we get into a fight. No honest expression. So they didn't honestly know what I need or what happened, and they can't honestly respond. You have to go to the first emotion, which is sad, vulnerable, lonely, scared, anxious, frustrated, disappointed, let down. Because we have no problem expressing the happy, excited, joyful. Well, we got that down pat. We have to learn how to do that. But the only way we can do that is when we start to normalize that. So practice that. Most of adult fights are around the lack of honest expression of primary emotions. And they go right to anger with everything. Everything goes is a battle. If someone let you down, if someone disappointed you, if someone hurt your feelings, anger is not the honest response. That might be a secondary one you go to. The honest response at first is you are disappointed. If someone disappoints you, your response is disappointment. If someone lets you down, your response should be let down. If someone hurts you, your response should be sadness. These are all soft primary emotions. We shouldn't be going in with anger. That's a secondary cover-up. We don't feel safe saying to this person that you hurt my feelings or you let me down. That's what we need to be doing. But we haven't normalized that. People will look at you strange sometimes, like, oh, wow, we're going to get real, huh? And it's like, yeah, yeah, we are. I'm even trying to do that in business scenarios. I don't believe anything's business. Humans first, always. And I don't care who it is, if a human being has let me down, hurt me, frustrated me, disappointed me, I work really hard to say that. Whether I'm in a business meeting, I'm lecturing in front of a couple hundred people, it doesn't matter. Humanity first, and that's important for my own mental and physical health, to humanize. There's no such thing as business only. That's a cover-up to say we're going to act sociopathically, we're going to put profits before people, we're going to dehumanize everyone. We don't want to, that's part of that problem. Practice this in your daily one-on-one lives, though. Don't let yourself off the hook. Make sure you're the friend or the family member or whoever that lives from those honest, vulnerable emotions and normalizes that. Couples get into so many big fights because no one's really coming to the first initial honest emotional experience. All right, we got to take a little break and we'll come back. We'll keep talking about this, y'all. So stick around. Emotionality. Good stuff. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on Channel Q and Odyssey. We'll be right back. All right, we're back and we're talking about difficult emotions, emotional honesty, trying to build better relationships, all the same stuff. And we're talking about how we don't often live from or feel from our primary emotions, which are honest and vulnerable, and they're safe and they keep us connected and they warrant empathy in the other. We usually jump right over that, go right to anger, and it usually is the secondary emotion that we choose. And if your responses are always from a place of anger, you're not being honest. You're disconnected from yourself. You're not being honest with yourself or this other person. Go to those vulnerable emotions. If someone did something that let you down, act and feel let down, not angry. If someone disappoints you, you should be acting and feeling disappointed, not angry. If someone makes you feel sad or left out, or othered, you should feel sad and left out, not angry. Anger happens when we haven't set a boundary. So we're angry with ourselves because we should have said no, or we should have told them what we needed. Anger happens when someone maybe harms us. Anger is a galvanizing emotion that says that action needs to be taken. It's very defensive. But if someone frustrates you, disappoints you, makes you feel lonely, makes you feel sad, there's no defensiveness in that. You weren't harmed. You were hurt, but you weren't harmed. You have hurt feelings. Live and express hurt feelings. Those are soft because they're rooted in hurt. We're not going to anger, which then creates defensiveness in the other person. We're expressing our softness. Stay soft. Stay soft. Safe, healthy people will respond softly to your softness. That is one of the most beautiful ways to change an entire relationship, is when you start doing that. Because now your defensive, angry partner isn't going to be responding angrily or defensively, because you can't when someone comes to you from a place of true softness. Not passive aggressive, not covert, but truly being soft. Like, wow, you know, hearing you just say that about me really hurt my feelings. Soft. And then they'll come over and they'll caretake that. And that's actually what it is you're truly needing. But we have to honestly express how we're feeling. We have to normalize that. This is foreign to a lot of us in our culture. But a way to start to do that, there's so many different entry points to start to do this work. The first one is to just stay quiet until you've been able to figure out what the true emotion is. If you're not ready for that step, just start watching other people and listening to other people in movies, at the, you know, restaurant table next to you, and you'll start to notice what should have been a soft emotion because someone was let down or made sad or disappointed or felt alone. They go right to anger, and you'll start to be able to call it out in others. That's a good step towards behavior changes, at least starting to identify it in self or others. And also retroactively looking back whenever you got into a fight and saying to yourself, let me look back at that fight and learn from it. Was I being honest with what I was feeling? What would have been me being more honest? And can I now circle back and bring that back up? Hey, I'm glad we got through that fight. I wanted to come back to it because I wasn't being honest with you. What I was actually feeling was sad. And I wish I just said that you made me sad. Or I wish I just said, wow, that disappointed me. And sad in my honesty and my softness. That's the first step. Another way to do this work is to check in with your body. Where am I feeling it in my body? We're so disconnected from our bodies. We're trying to go to yoga class where they're telling us the right way to do something and adjusting our bodies. We're being told we have to sit in a chair in school for how many hours without moving. We can't, you know, like we're always trying to perform correctness with our bodies. And it's really pulling, even with eating, we're trying to be on an eating plan or a diet, again, ignoring our body signals, what our bodies need. We're trying to force erections and penetration and pop pills when our body's like, nope, not in the mood or not down or not feeling safe or not feeling comfortable. We're always trying to override our body. We're very body negative in more ways than we realize. Body negativity is not just about loving your body at its shape or size. It's also about honoring and listening to your body. If you're not erect, your body isn't interested, comfortable, or willing or wanting to have sex, don't override it. If you're not lubricating enough, again, what's going on that you're not turned on or feeling relaxed enough? If you need to move, move. If you need to stand up, no matter how strange or awkward it is, please stand up. Please go for a walk. If you need to go to the bathroom, use the bathroom. We have to learn how to listen to our bodies. They are a powerful part of communication, but especially emotional communication. Every emotion has a feeling tied to it in our body. And if we can listen to our body, where do I feel this? We can start to get a better truth of what we're feeling. Because certain feelings reside in certain places in our body. You can be like, oh, I feel that. That's in my stomach. Oh, I'm scared. I'm not mad, so I'm not going to get angry, make this other person defensive. I'm scared. I'm going to say to them, wow, I'm really scared right now. Or wow, what you said just really scared me. Start connecting to your body. That's work we need to do. Anyway, eat when you're hungry. Stop eating when you're full, period. I don't care. Don't count calories. Don't be on an eating plan. Intuitive eating, that's health. Otherwise, you're doing something else. You're just trying to look a certain way. But listen to your body. Eat when you're hungry. Stop when you're full. If your body says, I need to stand up, find a way to stand up. If your body says, I need to move and go for a walk, find a way to go for a walk. If your body says, we have to start listening to ourselves. But we're always shutting it down and we're shutting it down. It's also comes up with emotions. So start by trying to figure out where in your body you feel from. It helps center it. It helps us identify it. Look, this might seem very elementary or remedial. For some people, it's important for them to literally Google feelings chart and to look at all the possible feelings. There are so many. And when we see these words, it helps us really understand the specificity of what's happening for us. And again, the reason why it's important is because that's how we build relationality with self and other. It's also how we actually get the true need met. Emotions are the expression of a need. We can't get them that need truly met if we don't really identify what we're feeling. If we're always going to anger, then nothing's ever getting attended to. And after we, you know, blew our lid and got into a fight, we walk away worse off, still having not gotten that need met, but now we also have repair to do on this relationship. I mean, that thread runs through everything. All right, we're gonna take a little break. We're gonna finish this up and then we'll close out with some DMs. So if you got a DM for us, drop in the DMs on our Loveland NG page, or you can check out past episodes over at wearechannelq.com. Stick around, y'all. We'll be right back. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on Channel Q in Odyssey. We'll be back. All right, y'all, we are back, and we're just driving home the importance of emotions. But more importantly, just not ruining relationship to self and others and burning things down by always going right to anger, but instead trying to go to the true primary emotion, which is always very vulnerable and soft. And if we can live from that place and feel from that place and speak from that place, it improves our life. We also get our needs met because we're expressing honestly what we need. If everything's anger, well, no one knows what to do with you except stay away from you because you're angry. But if you're lonely, they can come spend time with you. If they hurt your feelings, they can apologize very softly and reconnect. But if we're always just going to anger and we're pissed and everything's out of 10, we're not safe to be around, period. Not to mention our need won't actually get met. We're not even safe for them to listen to. Usually our anger isn't honest. There's a lot of things that are worthy of anger. There's nothing wrong with anger when it's honest. But a lot of times we're covering up and we're really going there out of shame, or we don't feel like our needs will get met, or we can express them, so we go to anger. So we're checking in on our bodies to really start to identify this. I haven't mentioned to some people, we Google emotions or a feeling list to really learn what are all the different things that we can feel. Because feelings are more of the expression. Emotions are more of the initial energy and placement in our body. So it's kind of like we turn an emotion into a feeling as we force it outward. So also, why is this emotion coming up now? Looking at the context. Sometimes we have to step outside of it and say, based on what happened, what would the true feeling be? If someone said something mean, well, that would warrant someone feeling sad, let down, disappointed, feelings hurt. Those are all, again, soft. Live and feel and express that. See what I'm saying? If you can look at a feelings chart, or again, look at the context, it helps you better understand what an appropriate response would be. Because a lot of us are on autopilot and we haven't had people really model for us all the different emotions or the safety. Because we have to practice this with people that will receive us and hear us and not shame us. A lot of us are raised in families where smiles only. And no one was any better off than you were. And if you had to express those emotions, a lot of parents didn't know what to do with it, or they were never around to help you learn how to deal with it, or they were working, or they really reinforced don't feel anything by saying, go to your room and play a video game, you'll be fine. Or here, go eat some cookies, you'll feel better. No one ever said, tell me what you're feeling. Let me sit in it with you. Feelings are okay. So just know that. Here, eat these cookies instead, or let's go play a video game, is the shutting down. It's saying, I'm not here for you. Others aren't here for you. It's sending people back to themselves. So again, where's in our body? We're looking at the context, better understand what might be a very, you know, really reasonable response. And this is where, you know, logic and rationality are important. I'm not saying, you know, unbridled emotions, because we don't want to be emotionally vomiting on people. We want to share thought out, processed, digested emotions. And that means pausing and checking in our body. That's a great way to do it. Where do I feel this in my body? Can I soften into that feeling? What is the label for that feeling? And then I express it. But we're not just vomiting it out. We do want to have a filter. We do want to think about the impact. We want to digest it a little bit. Otherwise, we're harming those around us. And we're then not safe. No one wants to feel like they have to put a bib on every time they spend time around someone, because they just vomit out emotion all over the place. We want to be tracking each other, seeing how it's landing, seeing if they're with us still, seeing if they can receive it. Because it's not just about you. The other person's having their own experience. They have their own familiarity or comfort around emotions. They have their own trauma around how safe are emotions. So they're living in their experiences as you're living in yours. And as healthy adults, we want to be aware of self and other. We always, as healthy adults, are tracking how we're landing and how we're impacting whoever's with us. And that is part of emotional expression. So sometimes we do digest a little bit. We process it. I love the transparency of letting someone hear you walk through your process. So sit with this. Practice this. Sometimes before we're ready to step into it, we just want to identify it in others quietly in our mind. Listen for others struggling with this, and you learn more about it. I give a lot of my patients that homework to practice these things, to identify it in self or others out in the world, not as a way to point fingers or to shame them, but as a way to just see it and to problem solve, how else could I have done it? And also the beautiful work of looking back at past arguments and saying, what was the actual emotion I was feeling? What was the need that I actually had? Because it's all about needs. Emotions are about needs. And anger doesn't let you know what you need. If someone says, I'm angry, it's like, I don't know what you need. Again, are you scared? Are you sad? Are you lonely? Are you depressed? Are you let down? Are you disappointed? Are you in fear? Are you stressed? That helps us understand what's going on and what they need from us. And so we want to, again, that's that digesting, that's that processing a little bit, giving a label. When we label something, that's when we're able to go up into our head. The mere act of labeling is bringing in your executive functioning, which is where logic and rationality live. So you're doing that when you apply a label. And we're helping work it through our bodies when we're identifying where in our bodies it's located. All these things are interconnected. So it's a little bit of top down when we put a label into it, and that's important. So again, identify it, practice it, look for it in others, look back at some past fights and say what, you know, was really going on for us there. That's what I do in a lot of couples therapy. So, all right, we're going to come back and do some DMs. If you got a DM for us, drop in the DMs on our Loveline IG page. Any question you got, topic you want covered, something you want us to cover deeper, go back to let us know. And past episodes, you can binge, post, share, re-listen. That's over at wearechannelq.com. Scroll down, look for the show and click on it. Stick around though, we'll be back. You're listening to Love Line with Dr. Chris on Channel Q and Odyssey. We'll be back. All right, y'all, we are back. Now it's time to slide into those DMs.
Sliding into the DMs.
All right, this one says, hey, Dr. Chris and Loveline, I've noticed that when sex is expected of me, grosses me out. Like on Valentine's Day, New Year's Eve, sex with the person I'm dating seems like it has to happen. And that's when I don't want it. But random spontaneous sex is the best. Partner's understanding about it, but I feel bad. Maybe they need more. Is this normal? Well, I don't want anything that I'm not in the mood for. And if you're expecting it, then it really goes from something sounding like fun to sounding like a chore and obligation. So I'd say a few things. Number one, don't have sex you don't want to have. Number two, is there a way to decrease the intensity of this expectation? Because I don't know that anyone's expecting sex on Valentine's Day or New Year's Eve. I understand that it's standard. That doesn't mean it has to happen or it's normal. And maybe you do, but you do it differently. Also, be open to the idea that it might on the front end sound like an expectation and therefore not good. But maybe once you're doing it, like anything else that feels good, we drop into it. There's a lot of things that we plan because that's kind of part of it, this expectation, the planning. But then it's fun when we're there. We plan going shopping. It's fun when we're there. We plan the movies. We pick the movie. We watch the trailer. It's still awesome when we sit through it. So maybe you do it for your partner. It's okay to have sex that you might not want to have, but you do it for your partner. But that choice and empowerment has to be there. I don't want people to do something we don't want to do, but it's okay to do something for someone. And there is a distinction between the two. Sometimes we're like, okay, I can be open to it. I can be willing. Right? That's the word, willingness. Are you willing? We do it for them, knowing that it's okay for us and we'll enjoy it. But if you can't find willingness and it'll feel disempowering or traumatic or bad, well, then don't. The most important part is you said your partner's cool, so we're good. So then be where you are, no problem. You're living the way you want to live. Your partner's supportive of that. High five, we're good. So don't make a problem out of something that's not, especially based on the fact that maybe it's normal for others, but not for you. We're not trying to be normal. We're trying to be authentic. We're trying to be honest, and we're trying to be rooted in our values and mental health. So let's just leave the question there for good. I don't want people changing themselves to fit a norm, but I do want us to be open to being growing and to being challenged. And that's what this might be bringing up, is that necessity, you know, where you're stepping outside of your comfort in service of someone else, but your partner's right there with you. But holidays shouldn't mandate anything. We should be open to them being what they are. There might be a New Year's Eve or Valentine's Day where you're really horny and down for sex, but then there might be a time where you're like, I want another form of intimacy and connection. Let's just cuddle, hold hands, compliment each other, write love notes. I don't know. But that's the thing, is I want to expand us outside of the definition of sex as being penetration, because I think that's what you're really saying. I might not be down for penetration, or I might not be down for sex that involves genitals. Cool. But are you down to hold hands and cuddle? Are you down to take a bath? Are you down to go for a cute walk? I'm sure. So do something like that, because it's okay to use holidays to really bond and connect and express love, care, and commitment and trust. So I wouldn't want you to necessarily back out of that part, but we don't necessarily have to make it erotic. It can be sensual. It can be affectionate. Those are all part of the umbrella label of sex. So, you know, honor that holiday somehow. But again, bigger than that, what's not a problem isn't a problem. Let's not make a problem where there isn't one. You're cool. Your partner's cool. We're all good, you know? Yeah, holidays are supposed to be fun, just like sex. So let's crank down the intensity, you know? I liked how you were saying that. So DMs, you got a DM for us? Drop in the DMs on our Loveline IG page. It's questions you got, topics you want us to hit, things you want us to circle back and drop deeper into. We're open to hearing from you, you know? Psychology, mental health, sex, relationships, intimacy, it's big themes. So bring those questions on and past episodes over at wearechannelq.com. Scroll down, look for Loveline, click on it. You can binge, post, share, re-listen. It's all about that repetition, trying to remind people that. Circle back, take notes, you know, really work with topics. If it's something triggers you, sit with it for a while. What can you learn in it? If there's a topic that hit hard, write it down. Keep exploring how to bring it into your life or the way that it shows up in your life. That's how we really do that transformative work. You know, otherwise it's just babble on your radio in the background. So wearechannelq.com, scroll down, look for Loveline, and there it all is. It can help other people. So, you know, feel free to share that stuff. Otherwise, y'all, same wishes, you know, be kind to yourselves, be kind to those around you. It's a tough time, so we want to go easy on ourselves and those we care about. But as always, y'all, thanks for hanging out, and you enjoy the rest of your night. See y'all later. All right, y'all, we are back. Now it's time to slide into those DMs.
Sliding into the DMs.
All right, this one says, hey, Dr. Chris and Loveline, I've noticed that when sex is expected of me, grosses me out. Like on Valentine's Day, New Year's Eve, sex with the person I'm dating seems like it has to happen. And that's when I don't want it. But random spontaneous sex is the best. Partner's understanding about it, but I feel bad. Maybe they need more. Is this normal? Well, I don't want anything that I'm not in the mood for. And if you're expecting it, then it really goes from something sounding like fun to sounding like a chore and obligation. So I'd say a few things. Number one, don't have sex you don't want to have. Number two, is there a way to decrease the intensity of this expectation? Because I don't know that anyone's expecting sex on Valentine's Day or New Year's Eve. I understand that it's standard. That doesn't mean it has to happen or it's normal. And maybe you do, but you do it differently. Also, be open to the idea that it might on the front end sound like an expectation and therefore not good. But maybe once you're doing it, like anything else that feels good, we drop into it. There's a lot of things that we plan because that's kind of part of it, this expectation, the planning. But then it's fun when we're there. We plan going shopping. It's fun when we're there. We plan the movies. We pick the movie. We watch the trailer. It's still awesome when we sit through it. So maybe you do it for your partner. It's okay to have sex that you might not want to have, but you do it for your partner. But that choice and empowerment has to be there. I don't want people to do something we don't want to do, but it's okay to do something for someone. And there is a distinction between the two. Sometimes we're like, okay, I can be open to it. I can be willing. Right? That's the word, willingness. Are you willing? We do it for them, knowing that it's okay for us and we'll enjoy it. But if you can't find willingness and it'll feel disempowering or traumatic or bad, well, then don't. The most important part is you said your partner's cool. So we're good. So then be where you are. No problem. You're living the way you want to live. Your partner's supportive of that. High five. We're good. So don't make a problem out of something that's not, especially based on the fact that maybe it's normal for others, but not for you. We're not trying to be normal. We're trying to be authentic. We're trying to be honest, and we're trying to be rooted in our values and mental health. So let's just leave the question there for good. I don't want people changing themselves to fit a norm, but I do want us to be open to being I want us to be open to growing and to being challenged. And that's what this might be bringing up, is that necessity, you know, where you're stepping outside of your comfort in service of someone else, but your partner's right there with you. But holidays shouldn't mandate anything. We should be open to them being what they are. There might be a New Year's Eve or Valentine's Day where you're really horny and down for sex, but then there might be a time where you're like, I want another form of intimacy and connection. Let's just cuddle, hold hands, compliment each other, write love notes. I don't know. But that's the thing, is I want to expand us outside of the definition of sex as being penetration, because I think that's what you're really saying. I might not be down for penetration, or I might not be down for sex that involves genitals. Cool. But are you down to hold hands and cuddle? Are you down to take a bath? Are you down to go for a cute walk? I'm sure. So do something like that, because it's okay to use holidays to really bond and connect and express love, care, and commitment and trust. So I wouldn't want you to necessarily back out of that part, but we don't necessarily have to make it erotic. It can be sensual. It can be affectionate. Those are all part of the umbrella label of sex. So, you know, honor that holiday somehow. But again, bigger than that, what's not a problem isn't a problem. Let's not make a problem where there isn't one. You're cool. Your partner's cool. We're all good, you know? Yeah, holidays are supposed to be fun, just like sex. So let's crank down the intensity, you know? I liked how you were saying that. So DMs, you got a DM for us? Drop in the DMs on our Loveline IG page. It's questions you got, topics you want us to hit, things you want us to circle back and drop deeper into. We're open to hearing from you, you know? Psychology, mental health, sex, relationships, intimacy, it's big theme. So bring those questions on, and past episodes over at wearechannelq.com. Scroll down, look for Loveline, click on it. You can binge, post, share, re-listen. It's all about that repetition, trying to remind people that. Circle back, take notes. You know, really work with topics. If it's something triggers you, sit with it for a while. What can you learn in it? If there's a topic that hit hard, write it down. Keep exploring how to bring it into your life or the way that it shows up in your life. That's how we really do that transformative work. You know, otherwise it's just babble on your radio in the background. So we are channelq.com, scroll down, look for Loveline, and there it all is. It can help other people. So, you know, feel free to share that stuff. Otherwise, y'all, same wishes, you know, be kind to yourselves, be kind to those around you. It's a tough time, so we want to go easy on ourselves and those we care about. But as always, y'all, thanks for hanging out, and you enjoy the rest of your night. See y'all later.